rest. Catch the blast of a hype verse. My clock burst, leaving a hearse. I did worse. I come rough, tough like an elephant tusk. Your head rush, fly like Egyptian musk. Aw, shit, butane clear, spark the Wixen. However, I mastered a trick just like Nixon. Causing terror, quick damage, your whole era. Hard rocks is locked the fuck up. I found shot, the yellow style. Hazardous, cause I wrecked, it's dangerous. I blow spots like Waco, Texas. I watch my back like I'm locked down. Hardcore hitting sound. Watch me act bulk and tear down. A little bit tight asshole. Songs going gold, no doubt. And you watch it, corny nigga fold. Yeah, they faking all that. Carrying gats, but your mind plan rolling like 40 max. Now you act convinced, I guess it makes sense. Wu-Tang, yo, soo, represent. I wait for one to act up. Now I got him backed up. Gun to his neck now, react what? And that's one in the chamber. Wu-Tang banger, 36,000 danger.
Had to go ahead and edit out that chorus in case any of the children's was listening here.
Well, it's not like they didn't say some questionable words during a couple of those verses, but
some choice content.
Yeah, but I finally got the an early, probably the first version of a Ghostface and Raekwon collaboration. I still remember when I first liked Wu-Tang, because I didn't like them at first. Because
after I had to keep telling you they were good.
Yeah, no, you did. I'll admit it. But I mean, you had to realize, like, I think like one of the first videos they did was The Mystery of Chess Boxing, and that video was kind of weak. They're all standing on a chessboard with all these socks over their heads and stuff, and rolling out of the van and stuff. And, no, that rolling out of the van was Protect Your Neck.
But the song was tight, though.
No, I know that song was tight, but, you know, I just, it wasn't as good as the NWA minivan, you know, when they used to rock that the Dodge minivan.
When they were trying to find out if you could rap.
Yeah, but I was visiting you down in San Luis Obispo. I think you had class, and that's back when you had CD players, and I just popped that CD player in, and I George Michaeled it. I listened without prejudice, and it was good. I enjoyed it. One thing I wanted to see if you could, this isn't scripted or nothing. I'm talking to my boy, but I have my donuts. I'm Bad News Ramen. We do a lot of, like, inside sayings here, and I know it's confusing for some people. So, like, can you name a couple of the inside sayings that we usually do? Like, well, I just did one of them, like, where you have to, like, watch something without prejudice. We always say we have to George Michael it, because way back when, for there's this singer named George Michael, quote, air quote, unair quote, and he was once part of Wham, and then he came out with his first album, which was called Listen Without Prejudice. And that was a hot album back then.
I think Faith was the first solo. It wasn't Listen Without Prejudice was the second album.
Was it?
Sure. Well,
you know you're George Michael around.
Well, I do like George Michael, but I'd say I wasn't really that into Listen Without Prejudice. So the only reason I knew that it existed was because I liked Faith.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna say Faith was the first solo effort.
Wasn't Faith? No, I think the album was called Listen Without Prejudice.
Faith was the album.
Faith was the album. Okay, because your mom rolled it, right?
In her, Tristan introduced me to that.
All right, your cousin Tristan. All right. Is there any other inside, like, we did the Barry Horowitz? You know, that's when you pat yourself on the back.
Barry Horowitz.
Is there anything else that you that we say that nobody really knows?
Yeah, the when we do the Jesse Ventura voice and start discussing what's the best deal on pretzels.
Yeah.
It's basically to indicate indecision, and it goes back to when Hulk Hogan was turned on, I believe, and Ventura wasn't there to see it. And
well, he wasn't turned on. He was attacked by the earthquake.
Okay, yeah, he was attacked.
And the earthquake broke his sternum.
Yes, yes. And then Monsoon was questioning
it was a Monsoon.
Was it McMahon?
It was McMahon,
okay,
yeah.
Well, he was questioning Ventura's whereabouts, and he came with some story about how he was, like...
He never actually said he was going to get a pretzel. He just, like, he left for a little bit, and he came back, and Vince was like, "Where were you, Jesse?" And then somehow, like, during soccer practice, I got in my mind that to make you guffaw. Guffaw, that's another one we do, to guffaw, is to laugh.
Which is not the same as to pshaw.
To pshaw, which is different.
Which is just a
disrespect. Well, yeah, so there's another one that I'm going to bring up, too. But yeah, I made up the story about him buying a pretzel, and you know, he was looking at the deals for pretzels, like, you know, three for two or three for five, or one for, you know, one for $3. And he's like, I'll take the one for $3.
I'm not that hungry, McMahon.
The other one, too, is actually, we have a lot of them that are wrestling related. So the other one is please. Because whenever Jesse would go off on a tangent, Gorilla would go,
please.
Please. And that turned into a...
Iliad.
And then it turned into Pleiads after that, too. Because yes. you had to borrow my mythology book back in seventh grade, and I was big into Greek mythology, and you're like, can I borrow your mythology book? And I was like, I don't know, man. I'm like, I kind of do that thing every day, but I let you borrow it. You weren't as inclined to mythology like I was, but it turned into Pleiads after that. So,
yeah.
So that's like, I think we just hit you with like five of them, dude. All at the same time. So let's go ahead and let me throw this out there. And
yes, sir.
Is this like probably like the best like is this like the best lead up to like a pay-per-view? And I don't mean like best in terms of like great matches, whatever it is, but where everything is like, is there anything you can really find at fault right now with the WWE Universe with what they're doing? I mean, everything's kind of on all cylinders right now. And you know, like watching Raw and stuff. I mean, even like the match with Kane and John Cena. I mean, that had some type of
story element.
Yeah. So I mean, just like everything right now, and like, you know, because when we first started this, we were talking about the lack of tag team division, the unimportance of the Intercontinental and U.S. Championship belt, and having a champion that we really didn't like. And right now, I mean, you can knock it down the line. Like tag team division's good. Intercontinental, I have no problem with. U.S., at least the U.S. is important again, and the tag team division is just going crazy. So what's your kind of thoughts on leading into this? Is everything right with the universe right now?
I'd say on the overall, yeah. I kind of thought this Raw was a little bit weak, but I thought the Raws post-Mania leading up to this have been pretty good so far. The show wasn't that great, I think. But story-wise, like, the stuff that's happening makes sense. Even, like, the Miz Sandow thing, it made sense. It worked for what it was.
And I kind of saw that coming. Like, I PMD'd it.
There's another one. There you go.
So you got to explain that one, too.
PMD was the second half of the rap duo EPMD, which is Eric and Parrish Making Dollars, when they had their split. And then Parrish Smith, which was PMD, came out with his first solo album, which was called, is it titled, I Saw It Coming, and like on the cover, he's like, he's got his hands on his head, he's like putting the do-rag on, and it's,
do-rag.
And the reference there for I Saw It Coming was basically he was saying like, he knew that like, Eric Sermon was a bitch, and he saw it coming, which is why they split.
I never understood why, like, EPMD is a good group. But I never understood, like, people would say, like, they're, like, two of the best, like, MCs out there. Sermon is good. I mean, I like Sermon's type, but PMD, to me, was pretty weak.
Yeah.
You know? So I never understood the whole kind of, and that's kind of, like, where you kind of, like, that, one of the first cases of East Coast bias, you know, like, since East Coast was saying that EPMD was so tight, and I was sitting there going, like, they're good, but, I mean.
The beats were sick,
yeah.
Right? But, yeah, but, and then Sermon was good, and Parrish was passable, but, yeah, I wouldn't exactly put him individually on legend status.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking about the PMD and PMDing the...
you said you PMD'd what was going to happen with Sandow.
Yes, but I thought that was going to... I didn't realize they were going to have the match for this Raw. So that was like the main event, right? Or did
no, it wasn't. So, but for me it was because...
Because it cut off.
Yours cut off too?
Mine cut off too.
Ah, okay. Oh, maybe it was a U-verse thing. And then it showed that it recorded all the way, but you just couldn't play past a certain point, right? Is that how you're...
No, mine actually just went straight into another show.
Yeah, so mine was weird, yeah. It just ended like as if you're at the end of your recording, but it still showed that I had another, like, essentially another hour left on to record. So the main event was Ziggler versus Rollins, which I didn't get to see.
Oh, great,
I particularly wanted to see that.
That's fucking great right there,
yeah.
Dean.
Well, because the thing is, I don't know then if you caught this or not, but he's no longer allowed to do the curb stomp. Did you see that?
No.
And that's not kayfabe. That's legit. They basically said it was too dangerous for, like, concussion and like, neck injury purposes. So they switched him to basically he's doing some form. It's almost the Dirty Deeds. But instead of doing it as like a fallback DDT, he does like a layup or he drives the guy's face in.
That's terrible. He has to come up with a new finisher. Yeah. That curb stomp was tight, dude.
Curb stomp was sick. Yeah, I don't like that. And he was so good at pulling it out from all sorts of different angles and situations. And that's what made it really good, especially if you're going to be a small champion, right? To be able to get like that flash win out of nowhere, you know, as opposed to like I guess Daniel Bryan's got it. Has the ability to do it with the running knee, except for, like, his whole thing is just, you know.
Since his matches are so scripted.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He can't just run out and do it. He's got to go in the corner and get 50 yeses up before he runs out there. So, I'm definitely going to miss the curb stomp. I mean, if that's what's best for the safety of the performers, then, you know, I think that's a good thing. But as a move, I think it's an awesome move, and I hate to see it go. So, that was actually one of the things I wanted to ask you was if you had seen that main event and what you thought of the new finish. Because I saw it on a GIF. I think it's my man, Death to All Marks. He does a pretty good job of, at Death to All Marks, he does a really good job of...
Let's look at it right now.
It's going to be from a couple days back if you're going to scroll down his timeline. But he does a really good job of putting up, like GIFs of wrestling moves from Japan to WWE to all the independent shows. And so, he's a pretty good follow. Only kind of sucks that sometimes, like, he's such a good follow that I find out what happened on Raw before I get to actually watch it because you know, we are on the West Coast, an undisclosed location. And so sometimes I'll see it before it comes around. But the move looked fine, but doesn't feel... It's when you're used to seeing that curb stomp, and it's a step down to go from that curb stomp to what he's got now. But again, if it's gonna be safer for these guys, then I'm okay with that.
Oh, what do you think of that? While I'm looking for this stuff over here, I got. What do you think of that stupid bit with a? That's not too bad. It's kind of like a wheel kick, and then.
He does like the leg kick out like Ambrose does on the Dirty Deeds, but instead of laying back, he does like a layout forward.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad, but
it's more. I think it's more of a signature move than a finisher.
Exactly, Gene.
what do you think of that? There's another one too. So yeah, go ahead and explain the exactly.
ravishing Rick Rude was going to have the pose down with the Warrior, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
but she was robbed, by the way. and I think that was when you were starting to turn a little bit against Warrior, right?
That may have been. I think my dad turned me against Ultimate Warrior.
What did your dad say about Ultimate Warrior?
It wasn't. It was more so he was saying like in terms
this
of the, no, he would say
this
like
is, this isn't like no, I was the one that said that.
No, him. He, in terms of physique, he thought like he liked Rick Rude's physique a lot better than Ultimate Warrior, and I think I was ingrained that well he's bigger, so it must be better than.
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
Yeah,
I was in jail with him.
Yeah. And there goes another one. Try to write Freaky Tales Part 2.
That was from Too Short, of course. What song was that?
I Ain't Trippin'.
Yeah.
Mark Curry.
East Oakland. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Mark Curry. But yeah, so. So Rude was the first one to do the pose down.
Yeah, well, Gene's doing like he's interviewing. It's not a promo, but like while the thing's happening, he's asking like, you know, what are you gonna, what's the next pose called? And he's like, I call this one
best
abs. Or that was a different one, but one of them was saying he was gonna it was like some kind of like a medley of poses, right? Mm-hmm. Then Gene goes, a muscular montage, so to speak?
Yeah.
And then Rude looks down and goes, exactly, Gene.
And then the music starts in. So, losing my train of thought again. What do you think of that stupid thing with Rusev and John Cena with the flipping chain, dude? I mean, how weak was that, man?
Just the fact that it was like an obvious setup in the back, or that somehow using the chain made the move more painful.
Just the whole thing. I mean, it's just it's so bad, dude.
I didn't think anything of it. I fast forwarded it actually.
You mean I watched the whole Raw and you fast-forwarded it?
I watched a little bit of that. I fast-forwarded most of the Cena-Kane match. I think I fast-forwarded, I watched the finish. It was all right. But, the Rusev thing is just... It's just dull is what it is.
It's just dull.
It's dull. Rusev's fine. I like Rusev.
Yeah, that's another one, of course. Too. Yes. You remember that one? Where that one's from?
Yeah. When Pacino's talking to his lawyer Davey Kleinfeld in Carlito's Way, and he keeps talking about he likes boats.
Yeah. What are you doing? If you ever talk that way again in front of her, I'll kill you. Or something like that.
The guy's gonna go on a boat trip. What's the question? Drink, you're seasick.
It's a legitimate question.
It's a fucking cokehead, Charlie. All
right.
It was bad, but yeah, the bar is so low right now with anything related to John Cena. It didn't even really faze me. I don't stop to think like how bad that is. Very often with Cena at this point, I just assume it's going to be really bad.
It's like Jesse looking at the prices of pretzels. That's how I kind of, when I see something like that, I just kind of like look off in his face and try like, well, is this the worst thing I've seen from him? Probably not.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I really didn't think too much of it. Honestly, I'd forgotten it happened until you brought it up. I'll go, because you've thrown a couple of topics out, so I'll throw one out here, which I never really thought that I would be doing, especially this early in the show. What are you thinking about the New Day right now? I mean,
I told you last week that them embracing that their gimmick sucks and that everybody else, you know, that nobody else likes the gimmick. I think it's actually working pretty good. I mean, even that match, I mean, with the Lucha Dragons and stuff. Because they're facing the Matadors for the no they're who are they
no facing? Lucha Dragons, and the winner is gets a title shot at the paper.
I like the direction that they're going. I mean, at least it's like, you know, they're able to kind of adjust to what they were given. I mean, I thought it was a weak gimmick to begin with, and I felt like it was kind of thrown together. And I think what I'm liking from the WWE right now is that you even look at like Cesaro and Kid, and that was thrown together at the last second. And these guys just like take off, you know, like they come out with their beat headphones, and you know, they start saying facts, and you know, that they even like the little backroom segment they had where they're watching the match and stuff. I mean, they work really well together, and they're making something of it. I feel the exact same way about New Day as well. I mean, they're not they're not doing like the typical like total heel stuff where, you know, they're doing all this crazy stuff to get heat. It was natural heat that they were getting, and they're able to take that and kind of spin it and then like make it work to their advantage where I actually want to see them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's working good.
That's what I was going to, do you want to see them? You like the segment? You thought?
I mean, when they come out now, you know, it's just because it anything that they do with that gimmick, it's stupid. Like it doesn't make any sense. But now that they know that the crowd thinks it's stupid, now they're kind of reveling in that, and they're really playing it up like I didn't like the direction that Big E was going, like kind of doing the whole sermon type of promo. Yeah. You know, I thought that was really weak. I thought that was a waste of his talents. But now that he can get some heat off of it, you know, they're embracing it. Now it works even better. So I'm a mark for what's going on. I mean, I think that's the one thing that the crowd did get right. And then at the same time, these three guys are able to recognize that. And it's the most personality that Kofi showed since I've seen him wrestle. So, you know, to have any type of personality for anybody, you know, I mean, all three guys were dead in the water. I mean, it was so bad that, you know, what's his name? Consequences Creed.
Woods?
Yeah, Woods. You know, he was with R-Truth, and that didn't work. You know, and just that whole gimmick right there, it wasn't working. You had three guys all by themselves that really weren't doing anything, and now the three of them are together, and there's power in numbers, and they're making that gimmick work for them. So I'm all for it. It doesn't bother me that they won. I mean, I thought the way that they won, it was underhanded, but it wasn't over the top underhanded. You know, it was like just like a little dig here. You know, with Creed. How come I can't remember his name?
Xavier Woods, your godson. Yeah. Your godson.
you know, it was just like a small little thing where he kind of interfered. He didn't even interfere. He just like got his attention, and then they're able to turn around. I thought
that are you talking about how he held?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Well, yeah. That turned the match when he got his attention, and then it went back and then held the foot. Yeah, I thought that was perfect.
Yeah, that was really good because that was like, you know, there's so many like tired spots where like some guy just jumps on the apron and like, hey, ref, come here. Mm-hmm. Right when someone's getting pinned, you're like, oh, hey, yeah, I'll walk over there. Right?
But he has something to say.
Yeah, but this was actually like a creative way of that you got interference without making the referee look like a moron.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked pretty well. And I even like really small detail too, I think, but after Orton came out and RKO'd the two guys, and then when like he had the stare down with E, and then Big E decided, nah, he was just gonna go on. Like that's a good like really small like heel kind of activity for Big E, right? It's kind of nuanced. It's not blatant, but it's there, right? So I think they are showing a lot of growth, and I think there's a good opportunity. I don't know if you heard, because I barely heard, but one of the Usos is out for like 4 to 6 months with an injury, and you know we've been talking up the Usos like crazy for the last 6 months to a year. And they really have carried that division. I think the division is in a place where, you know, it's at a it can sink or swim, and you got enough depth if you use it correctly. And it looks like they're taking the teams that they have, and for the most part, starting to use them correctly. And you know, you're not going to be able to replace the Usos with one team, right? You gotta come in and bring some diversity to what there is. So you know, I think you know it's a good opportunity, and if they can go in and make the most of it, if Kid and Cesaro can make the most of it, I mean, I could see at the time when the Usos are out, you let Kid and Cesaro have a dominant run, and then when the Usos come back, you can have a really legitimate battle between those two teams to see who the best tag team of this time period is.
Well, I mean, I think you know, I mean, I don't like anybody getting hurt, but I think it's at an opportune time for them, for the Usos, to be out of it for a while, because I think their act was kind of getting stale a little bit. I mean, the one thing about the Usos is that they're a type of team where nobody's better than them in the ring. They're great, you know, they're great, not technicians, but they're good workhorses, and they're the best team there, but they lack personality. And, mm-hmm. and I really thought when they were kind of pairing up with John Cena, I thought there's an opportunity there where they can get a little bit bigger and kind of, you know, become like the team. And they're already the team, but you know, you try to have a storyline then with Miz and Miz Dow, and that really didn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so the only thing that's stopping the Usos from being a great, great tag team is just personality. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. Like, I'm still going to watch what they're doing, but you know, it is a chance for these other teams to kind of shine, and I really think the one team that really kind of, and I've been talking this team up, I feel like I'm like Jesse the Body Ventura talking about the Hollywood Blondes with the Lucha Dragons, you know. I think that's a team that's really, you know, there's an empty spot, they took that spot, and they're a legitimate tag team. And then, you know, then you throw in some two really good workers with the Matadors as well. You have the primetime players on the mic, you know, that are really good on the mic, so it's a good balance. And then you have, you know, Cesaro, and you know, Cesaro's really showing his personality with his team with Kid, and Kid's able to do it as well. Those shirts are pretty tight too. The shirts that they rolled out with, you know, it has like the Swiss flag and the Canadian flag and stuff. So that works really well. And then you have New Day as well, which is kind of like a nice little faction team. So I've been really impressed with the tag team, and the
Ascension, dude. Don't forget
about the Ascension. Yeah, I'm not going to forget them. Yeah, the 5'5" guys and stuff. Yeah, I think the small guy is probably a head taller than Kalisto, so that he has that going for him. So, but other than that, I mean, the tag team division, the tag team matches are the matches that I look most forward to watching. And the difference is, like, you're not really seeing, like, I mean, they'll have, like, tag team main events with, like, your top stars to kind of draw, you know, at the end, but they're not relying on it as much as they used to. You know, now it's, like, kind of more, I think the tag team division being as strong as it is, now you can start having single matches again, where before, since there was really no tag team division, and I think the singles guys were still kind of learning the ropes, You had a lot of tag team matches, which was really fun to watch, and I think the Usos thrived in that, and so did the Shield. But now that
six man tag matches,
yeah. But now that you have, you know, now these guys are kind of established now. It's working really well. I mean, everything top to bottom. I mean, Seth Rollins with his two guys, you know, with his security and stuff, with that one guy with the flipping southern accent and stuff. You know what I mean?
Jamie Noble.
Yeah, I mean, everything's working right now. I'm trying to remember the segment that I liked as well Bo Dallas coming out and him coming back and putting down Roman Reigns and stuff. I mean, that everything is working well. I mean, I enjoyed that segment as well.
All right, I got another question, and this one I think is kind of interesting because it's a line that that we're going to be talking about your youngest daughter's favorite wrestler for a minute, the Big Show, and it's a line that he's been using a little bit since Mania that I think it's a line that is meant to get him heat and a line that is meant for the audience to just, like, to push Shaw and throw out of the way here. But he's been coming through saying, like, reading his resume and claiming that he is the best big man that the sport has ever seen, and he's better than Andre the Giant. And at face value, you know, for us old people, it's something that most of us should just say, psh, yeah, there's no way he's better than Andre the Giant. But I want to actually examine that and ask you the question, is the body of the Big Show's work, his career at this point, you know, which is winding down, has he had a better career than Andre the Giant?
Well, we saw Andre the Giant when he was already
at his tail end.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, like, we used to kind of make fun of him a lot, too, because he really didn't do that much in the ring. But, I started watching, you know, his stuff that he did in the 70s and stuff, and how, you know, how, I wouldn't say agile, but, like, how, I mean, athletic. I mean, and he wasn't really that athletic before, that guy that big, the spectacle that he was. I think Andre is going to get the Four Horsemen treatment. You know, like, the Four Horsemen, everybody says they're the best faction ever because they were the first. You know, they were, the first legitimate group. You know, and you kind of had factions here and there, you had stables. They were the first ones to become a faction. And you know, All for One, One for All, Four Horsemen, Diamonds Are Forever, and JJ's going, yes, 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 yeah.
Putting his hand in the middle.
You know, with the Giant's body of work, even when he was young, when he first came in WCW, that guy was something else. I mean, this guy
talking about Big Show now.
Big Show, yeah. I mean, he was pulling off drop kicks.
Yeah.
He pretty much invented the choke slam. Maybe someone in Japan did it, but he legitimized it. I mean, that choke slam for a while was the most devastating move in wrestling. Andre never really had like a
signature move.
Yeah.
He had an elbow, right?
He had an elbow, which was, at the time, I mean, the guy, as big as he was, that was a major move. But, I mean, Andre, I think, is always going to be the best because he was the first.
But I want to get past that. I mean, I despise that sometimes, the thought that...
Well,
it's like the dude on the chat room that wants to say first, right?
Yeah.
That posting.
Well, then I won't go that way. I mean, I'll add something else to it as well. Big Show is not the draw that Andre the Giant was. You know, Big Show... will never headline a WrestleMania that meant as much as Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. And I think it speaks volumes about Andre the Giant to headline a WrestleMania that was... WrestleMania 3, I don't care what anybody says, and you can talk about Macho Man and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and all the matches there, but that is the WrestleMania that every other WrestleMania is compared to. There will never be a better WrestleMania than WrestleMania 3. And the whole thing was that Andre and Hulk Hogan was like a Mike Tyson fight when Mike Tyson had the belt. You know, like every pay-per-view that Mike Tyson was in, like everybody was talking about, like, you know, a month ahead of time, like, oh, you know, Mike Tyson's going to fight, you know, going to fight this guy, he's going to fight this guy, he's going to fight that guy. It's like, what it's comparable to is like Tyson versus Spinks, right? I remember Tyson versus Spinks because Spinks wasn't beaten and, you know, he was tall and he had a way bigger reach than Mike Tyson did. I mean, that was like the first legitimate time where I was like, man, I'm like, Tyson could probably lose to Spinks, you know. And of course, Tyson kicks his ass. It was kind of the same thing when it was Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. You literally didn't know who was going to win. You know, it wasn't like you're sitting there like, oh, this is Hulk Hogan's time. He's gonna win. No, I mean, you're sitting there watching, and, you know, you too, heading into this match. You know, it's like, how the hell is he going to beat Andre the Giant? and it lived up to everything that it was. Was it a great match? No, it wasn't. But Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant, that's, I mean, how many times did you rewind that on our VCR? You know what I'm saying? I mean, how many times did we watch that slam? You know, like, it's like, hey, why don't you roll out that, WrestleMania 3 tape you have, and let's just watch that slam. You know, and then over, the course of, a couple of weeks, we're like, hey, why don't we watch that Macho Man, Ricky the Dragon? Big Show will never be as good as Andre the Giant, because Andre the Giant was a draw wherever he was. I don't think Big Show hasn't been protected enough.
That's the better.
Yeah,
that's the better statement, because it's not, because that's a decision, and right. I mean, the business has changed since when the Giant was the guy, right? He was the draw, but he was extremely well protected. A lot of the last 5 to 8 years of the Big Show has been just using the fact that he is so big to have him lose and get other people over. And I think that's a testament to him in terms of, his dedication to the business.
The two things I'm going to bring up with the Big Show is, one is Floyd Mayweather Jr. I mean, that was a joke of a... I mean, that's a bullshit of a match. And the whole thing is that Show does jobs. And, Show does jobs more than Andre ever would. Mm-hmm. And you're right, the business has changed. I mean, Big Show, if you want to talk about best for business, Big Show has done everything based on business. And so he's had to be the fall guy a lot of times. And the number two reason is his crying. I mean, just that whole crying thing and everything like that. I never really understood that. When he came back and just became a badass and stuff, and to tell you, his punch, I mean, I'm going like, yeah, that punch is kind of weak, but over the course of time, like, man, that punch is, it's a great finisher. So his body of work, he can say that, but the whole thing is that Andre's the man, dude. I mean, I'm going to do it based off of drawing power and even power that Andre had. I mean, Andre had so much power. I mean, the backstage stories that Andre had.
Yeah, the legendary drinking stories. Might.
No, I'm not even talking about that.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah,
though.
That is part of it. But I mean, he didn't like Randy Savage. He would never talk to Randy Savage. Bret Hart, said for a while that Andre used to get along really well with Bret Hart. When back in the Stampede territory, and then his brother had to drive Andre to
Stu?
The not Stu no Stu was the dad.
Sorry.
It's the oldest brother, the Smith. Smith, yeah. Smith drove. So Andre was late to get into the airport. They had maybe 40 minutes to get to the airport, and they were 45 minutes out or whatever it was. And Smith's like, "Well, I can make it." So Smith, Brett, and Andre are in the car, and Smith is just driving crazy. Like, we went in on traffic, and Andre...
Scared.
I wouldn't say he's scared, but,
Yeah,
he's scared.
No, he was.
Yeah. And so the next time that Brett saw him, Brett was in another territory doing something, and Andre was there, and he's like, "Hey, Andre, how's it going?" And, Andre wouldn't say a word to him. And this lasted for probably about, 2-3 years, and then Brett gave him a compliment or something like that, and then Andre started talking to him again. So it's just the power that guy had back there, and kind of how he protected himself, but he also protected the business and protected certain other people. And if he didn't see something in you, he would tell you. I mean, he had a run with the Ultimate Warrior too. And, Bobby the Brain Heenan, brings up, Andre's like, "Hey, telling Warriors like, "Hey, put me in the spot." Like, he's one of Andre's favorite spots towards the end of his career was that he would get run into the ropes, and he could tie himself up in the ropes where he couldn't move. And, Warrior botched that up or something like that. And Bobby's just mad as all hell. He's like, "How the hell can Ultimate Warrior do this or do that?" And Andre's like, "Oh, he'll learn. So the next match, Warrior starts doing kind of the same stuff, and all Andre does is just puts his fist out, and the Warrior runs straight into it and just floors him. And then after that, Ultimate Warrior realized, okay, I have to follow this guy's lead. So, It's kind of a gray area. Like, I mean, Big Show can say that, but based off of drawing power, based off of Andre being the first, and just based off of sheer enormity of the spectacle that Andre the Giant was.
Was he for the time when he was the guy? Was he the Undertaker of that locker room? Was he the guy that kind of
No, I think Undertaker was more of a judge. Where Andre was more like he had a, nobody would mess with Andre just because, he could tear you up. He could tear anybody up, but I don't think he ever really kind of fought for any, you know, for any semblance of the way the backstage was. He was just, you know, he was just a guy you didn't mess with, and you wanted to be on his good side because if you're, you know, since Andre, wherever he went, he drew money. You know, any wrestler that wanted to be good in the promotion wanted to
have a chance
to not fight on, you know, not to have a match with Andre, but to be on Andre's good graces, you know. So like, because if Andre said something, you know, the promoter would listen.
Right.
I mean, this guy fought everywhere. I mean, he was huge in Japan as well. I mean, literally and figuratively, you know. But I mean, the guy,
giant machine.
Yeah, the big bad machine and stuff and everything. I mean. The guy, you know, the guy drew wherever he went, and he went to a lot of places, and he was always the main draw. You can't say that, you know. You can't say that about Big Show. Granted, times have changed, but you know, the Big Show has always kind of, you know, always kind of been a foil, and he's overpowering, but at the same time, you know that his, you know, the way his personality has been portrayed, you know that he, you know, he has a weakness somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, and it usually gets exploited in some type of way. And I think that's more the fault of WWE than anything else. Right. So,
yeah.
If he was treated the same way as Andre, then yeah, maybe, you know. And I, you know, as with Big Show, I think there's a big failure in Big Show. You know, I mean, this guy, you can have him. You know, if you put all your money on Big Show and made him the number one guy, you're like made him the ace, like in New Japan, right? I mean, this guy could have one of the greatest careers ever. But he was always, you know, he came at a time where personality was more, and wrestling was different. Wrestling was more, more intense, high paced. I mean, he came at a time when The Rock was doing his thing, and then you know, Stone Cold was one of the most ferocious guys in the ring. I mean, just, you know, no nonsense, just kick your ass style, and that's what he grew up in. And then, of course, he has to deal with the crap in WCW and all the politics in WCW. You know, I mean, Hulk Hogan had to beat him. You know, you could beat, you know. The Giant could beat Hulk Hogan, but in the end, Hulk Hogan would have to win at the end. So,
well, it also was, and it became the time too in the Attitude Era when they stopped they stopped revering size as the be all end all, right? Because, you know, because the cruiserweight division got so popular in WCW. Now the WWE didn't full on go to that, but they went to the kind of like mid-sized champion, right? You're 250 to 270 pound guy. They weren't necessarily going for the 300 pounders and the 7-footers as much, right? Because that was kind of like the era right before Attitude Era started in a way. Like, I don't know, would you consider like Diesel Attitude Era?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
No, I wouldn't. No, that was
right
pretty,
before,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so like that, they were still going, if you're 7 feet and somewhat athletic, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a run to see what you could do. But by the time you got full on into the Attitude Era, you know, it's like Triple H, Kurt Angle, The Rock, Steve
Edge.
Austin.
Yeah.
Edge had to bulk himself up to get to that point. Yeah. I think he probably maxed out in the 240 pound range. But still, it was the small Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho. It wasn't the land of the giants anymore, and that kind of probably hurt Big Show when he first came over to WWE because he couldn't work that same kind of high-energy match with those guys.
I'll say this. I mean, and I want to talk about the WrestleMania that we went to and stuff, and everybody wanted Sandow to win, and everybody thought that Show would do the job for Sandow. And I think Show came into his own again. And this guy's come into his own so many times. I'll say this. Big Show is probably one of my favorite wrestlers, and, you know, in terms of the person that he is, like, you know, just like the person that, you know, the person that's not kayfabe. I mean, just the way he is, you know, just like the way he is outside of the ring and stuff, personality wise, him as a person. And then just, he's going to be one of those guys where, you know, when he goes into the Hall of Fame and you kind of look back at his career and you're going to sit there and you go like, you know, this guy was really good. And you're right. You know, you just named all those names, right? And like, even like Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle was like the lowest name on that totem pole, but he was huge back then in WWE. So he's one of these guys that you're going to look at, you know, in hindsight and just go like, you know, this guy was a great performer. And maybe we start saying, when and all said and done, that he's the best giant to ever be there. But it's Andre the Giant, dude. You know.
Well, yeah, I'm not gonna. I thought it'd be a good point of conversation because I'm not gonna debate that Andre isn't the best. I'm not gonna say definitively that he's not, Because and I think you're absolutely right. The ability to draw is a huge factor in all of this. But I think when it comes down to it, I mean, Big Show's the better worker, mm-hmm. and based on what he's done, and he's really evolved. He's one guy that's really gotten better year after year after year. Now he's actually a good promo.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of unfair to Andre a little bit because he had, you know, that French accent.
Hey, Andre kicked it. He kicked a tight promo.
Right, but he didn't have the versatility of promo.
You're shimming now.
Yeah, he didn't have... I'm not going to take me long to come back and find you.
The WWF. Here's the other thing, too, right? So, like, when we were watching Montana play, right, and we're sitting here going, like, dude, like, Montana's, like, the best quarterback ever. But what was everybody saying? Everybody was saying, was talking about Unitas, right? Like, oh, Unitas is the best quarterback. And I was like, dude, I'm like, okay. He's like, well, because he was the first and this, that, and this, right? I was like, well, Montana's way better. And then people for a while were trying to say Elway, and it's just like...
Elway and Marino, that was the ones that pissed me off.
Yeah, and you know, and people are starting to look at it now with like, Brady winning, you know, his fourth Super Bowl, you know, that they're trying to say that Brady's the best quarterback. And they're not bringing up Elway. They're not bringing up, you know, Marino. They're bringing up Joe Montana because Joe Montana has four rings. Well, there's no way in hell that Tom Brady's better than Joe Montana. But for people like me and you that saw this guy, I think there's different aspects of that, too. Like, in a big game, who would you want to have? It's Joe Montana. Joe Montana was the most accurate passer I've ever seen. And when he was in his prime, the guy could move. And a lot of people remember Joe Montana towards the tail end of his career, but the guy was a flipping winner. Brady has the same thing. I think Brady has a better system to work with because the West Coast offense in his infancy really didn't have a lot of moves, you know, didn't have a lot of plays, but Joe Montana, you know, exploited him and made him work really well. And then when that West Coast offense started taking off, it really started working. I think what Belichick does, you know, Belichick, you know, you had Walsh's system, you had Belichick's system. I think Belichick's system is more versatile, but, you know, Brady exploits that system where he has a lot of options to do. Well, you don't have that without Joe Montana. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of the same thing. Like, there's always going to be, like, someone's going to say, like, well, this guy was better than this guy was better than this guy. But when it comes down to it, you know, like, Joe Montana, I think, is going to be the best quarterback of all time. Unless there's a guy that wins like five Super Bowls without losing at all.
Kaepernick.
You think Kaepernick? Yeah. with Tom Sula? So.
Whoa. It was heavy breathing over there. I think the difference with like your Unitas comparison is, even though it was the tail end, you know, we actually did see Andre. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit unfair. Maybe it's almost like the Larry Bird comparison I was making last week about
seeing Larry. What do you think? I mean, between Andre and Big Show.
I think what you said is right. I think drawing power, kind of, and legendary status that Andre has, edges him out. But I think.
And plus, he rocked that afro in the 70s.
Yeah, but I think, like, if it came down to it, like, really, like, if there was, like, a same opponent and you wanted to watch a match, like, you'd probably rather, like, Big Show can do much more things in a match than Andre the Giant ever could. So, but that's, like, the evolution.
Not Andre the Giant in the 70s. You know, I mean, I think Andre Giant in his prime, I don't think there's anybody better. And I guess that's the other thing, too. And because he was much more physically imposing than you know, the Giant is.
Right. But his finisher was an elbow drop. I mean, we're talking about a guy that at 450 could do a drop kick when he was in his prime. You talked about that choke slam. He's evolved several different finishes over the years to now this KO punch.
Well, I'll give the Giant the slight edge because he used to come out smoking a cigarette in WCW. You know, his entrance, there was a time when he was just smoking a cigarette, and he's like, he had like a match, there's a cigarette burning on the turnbuckle, and he's like, hold on, and you go over and smoke it and stuff. So, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Okay.
Are we done?
I mean, those are the questions I wanted to ask you. I wanted to see, like, what you had thought about how New Day was progressing, and then, you know, this Andre thing, and then I was hoping you got to see the match that I didn't get to see, that main event, but apparently didn't work, but I wanted to see what you thought about changing that finisher as well. So those were the... Again, I didn't really think a whole lot of stuff happened on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting close to, you know... It's getting close to the
pay-per-view. Yeah, it was like the go-home, if you want to call it that.
But the main thing, I mean, I think the main point that I wanted to bring out was that, you know, there's not... Even though I think this pay-per-view is a throwaway pay-per-view because it's a pay-per-view after WrestleMania, I think the WWE is in a way better place than it was as compared to a year ago.
Yeah, well, because they spun a lot of storylines out of Mania, a lot of mileage that they could use to go forward. And I think that's why it's in a good position right now. Could do, even though there's still, we spent all this time like shining up a Big Show right now. But again, they're gonna stick him against Roman Reigns, which you know you gotta let Roman Reigns do something else aside from fight Big Show at this point. I think Rollins, Orton.
I have a question about Roman Reigns.
Okay.
What the hell happened to his eyes, dude? I mean, because in the Shield, I don't remember his eyes being like that. That
they're contacts.
He's wearing green contacts,
or light blue. Yeah.
Okay, so his regular eye color is like brown, yeah. Right? So now it's okay. Why is he wearing the contacts for, dude?
The ladies love it. I suppose.
Ladies love it.
LL Cool Roman.
Yeah. LL Cool R. Yeah.
LL Cool Reigns.
Well, I mean, what the hell is that though? I mean.
I mean, I think it's kind of lame, but whatever, dude. That's like minimal. That's like the last of my concerns for Roman Reigns at this point.
I just wanted to clear the air on that. So. Okay,
yeah. I mean, I like Roman. I think Roman does a good job. I think Roman gets a really bad rap. And I think that they're doing him no favors by constantly making him fight Big Show and Kane. I mean, you could do so much... You know, if you don't want to put the belt on him right now, there's a ton of other stuff that you could do
with him. Who do you want to see him work with then? Who'd be a guy to, like, would it be, like, Bad News Barrett? Sheamus?
Yeah, both of those guys would be good. I don't know that right now is the right time, but Rusev at some point I think would work. Wyatt I think would work. Let's see.
And Wyatt doesn't have a match for the pay-per-view, huh?
No, I don't think Wyatt's doing anything right now.
Yeah.
But
he's like, isn't he like, he's like trying to reveal some type of secret or something like that, or there's something he's talking about. I just want the Wyatt family. I think the Wyatt family needs to get back together.
Yeah, yeah. Harper's kind of dying right now on his own. I mean, he's a great performer, but there's just no direction to his character.
He called out Dean Ambrose on the mic. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
A little bone there.
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, I'm fine with them having a match. Or a series of matches. It's just that it doesn't seem that without Bray there's any direction for Luke Harper. He's just a guy that goes out every week and puts on good matches and loses 75% of them.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and go into I don't have the golden mic. I didn't have time to do that. I was watching Sonny Gray pitch for the A's and stuff.
All right.
So you mentioned last week that you had like three guys, and we went with the guy that you thought that I was going to fight against, you know, and that was like Paul Roma and Hercules Hernandez. Is there another guy that you want to put in the Hall of Kayfabe?
Yeah, I got another
okay.
Group.
You got another group? Well, let me throw a name out here, and because I think there's some backstory with this there where you can enlighten with it. We never put Coco Beware in the Hall of Kayfabe, huh?
I thought you nominated him before.
Have I?
I thought so.
Did we talk about the Ghost? Yeah, we did, because we talked about the Ghostbuster, right? Okay, so you're putting in another group.
I think it's a duo, though it might be a trio. And I know one of these guys you're big on. One of the other guy I don't know how much. And then, so I'll be the one to talk about that other guy. And I'm going to say, like, I wasn't necessarily, like, this huge fan of him in his prime, but I think he's carved out a really nice career for himself over time. And so I want to induct Kai and Tai.
Kai and Tai, yeah.
And so I know you're a big fan of Sho Funaki, so I was going to let you talk about Funaki. And then I would talk about Michinoku a little bit.
Well, why do you think I was big on Shofunaki?
You like you always like Shofunaki.
Oh, I mean, he was passable. I like Taka way better.
Oh, you like Taka? You want to talk about Taka?
Well, do we want to put Kaientai in? What about the Young Dragons? Can we put them
in? Well, I mean, Jimmy Wang Yang might be able to make his way in.
That's my boy, dude.
But I don't know about Jimmy Wang Yang. Well, you don't even know, but if you're inducting the Young Dragons...
You have to put in Noble, too.
You'd be putting Noble in.
I know, dude. Come on, man.
Well, you said, you know, that guy with the southern accent earlier, so...
Well, I mean, come on, dude. I have this damn peacock waking me up at 4 o'clock in the morning, dude. And then I have my stupid-ass neighbor climbing up a fucking ladder to give him some fucking water, dude. I'm like, dude, what the hell are you doing giving this peacock water when he's... I'm like, do you not hear him at 4 o'clock in the morning? So, I'm out of it, dude.
Yeah, well...
You try to wake him at 4 o'clock every goddamn morning with a... All
right, how about this, then? If you don't want to induct Funaki, but you want to put...
We can put Taka in there.
Okay, well, let's go Taka, then. Because, I'll say this. When he first came out, I wanted to like him. You know, I liked him well enough. I wanted to like him because I wanted to see more Japanese wrestling. But I felt like, you know, from the Japanese wrestlers that I had seen in WCW, like, this guy was a big step down, right? And then he was just, like, your straight-up kind of, like, corny babyface character for a while. But then, you know, even though it was kind of a...
You know what? No, we're not going to put Taka in right now.
All
right. The guy we need to put in...
Is it Jimmy Wang Yang?
No. Tajiri. Tajiri's the guy we got
to
put in.
You want to go Tajiri? Yeah. All right, go Tajiri.
That's the guy I want to put
talk
in.
About him. Talk about him.
Tajiri was in ECW, right?
Yep.
So, and this guy, I'm just going to put him on for a couple reasons. He brought the Poison Mist back. He was with, his valet was your girl, the blonde. La Rubia looks like my sister. Come on, dude.
Tori Wilson.
Yeah, Tori Wilson was his valet for a little bit, and he told Booker T that he looked like buckwheat on crack. So but I mean, this guy was, you know, he brought in, you know, all joking or non joking aside, since nobody's laughing right now. He brought a very, very rough style. You know, he brought the kicks back. Had a great finisher with that kick to the face, and of course that poison miss at the same time. This guy, I don't think ever got his due. I mean, he had a nice little run, but, you know, he came at a time where wrestling was kind of in a lull, and WWE really didn't know what to do with him. And I think he fell through the cracks with the stuff he did, and he had a tarantula too. You know, the tarantula, and, you know, in the ropes and stuff. So the guy in terms of seeing, you know, having thing, you know, seeing things that you never saw before. And having, like, throwbacks as well with the Poison Mist and stuff. I thought he was a really good wrestler. I really enjoyed watching him, and I don't think he ever got his due.
Yeah, that tarantula was good. And I remember him also having a really good, like, form of an octopus hold, too.
Yeah.
And so had a pretty solid nickname, the Japanese Buzzsaw, and it fit his wrestling style, right? Very aggressive, very attack. As small as he was, yeah, like, the kicks that he brought in, like, made him, like, a viable opponent for anybody, right? So it was, like, even if he was going against, like, a really big opponent, and that was kind of, I guess, part of the throwback as well, right? I mean, he could be getting his ass kicked pretty good by, like, a larger opponents, and then he could just continue to work kicking a leg for, like, 10 minutes. And the kicks were so good that after a certain point, you're like, yeah, damn, that guy's leg's probably pretty messed up right now. I would have actually... I think I would have. That's one of the ones where I would have liked to watch ECW and see how he did there against, if he was in there at the time when, like, Benoit and Jericho and some Malenko and these guys. I would think they would allow him to do a lot more stuff and put on some really good matches. But yeah, Tajiri, I think, and kind of similar to Michinoku. Like, I don't know how much, like, fanfare they had in Japan when they came over, but they really made their names. In WWE and in ECW in America, whereas in Japan they probably would have been like second or third level guys at that point.
Taka had a pretty good following back then in Japan, and then when he went back to Japan after WWE, that's when he became big. Yeah. Yeah,
right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if they had to go through the Japanese system from the ground up, probably would have taken them a lot longer to get that notoriety if they ever even got to that point. but them being able to create names for themselves in America.
It's prestige. It's not notoriety.
Okay.
Notoriety
would be, for a bad thing.
Yes. You gain fame through bad means. That's one of the most misused words. I can't believe you came to my house and used that word. Notoriety.
Well,
You're notorious for doing
that. Well, you know, I could make the argument that Taka did gain notoriety because he attempted to remove the Wang off of one Val Venus.
Yeah. So we're still
there. And the Japanese secretary was hot, too.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, she wasn't the secretary. She was the wife of the fat Japanese dude. You got your story all mixed up. You got it all miscombobulated. The Japanese manager for Kaientai tried to chop off Val Venus's member, and then that's what happened. And we're not even going to get into when the Undertaker tried to impale Stone Cold. That was another great moment in wrestling history as well. But you know, Taijiri, he's one of those guys where, you know, when you watch him in the ring, it works. You know, like everything, you're like, yeah, like this guy's a wrestler. You know, like, yeah, and everything he's doing is good. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, it's hard to kind of push a Japanese wrestler in WWE. I don't think they've ever really pushed a Japanese wrestler for the most part. So I think he's just one of those guys that fell through the cracks, but, you know, put on a great match whoever he faced.
Yeah, and he was like a guy, and that's a pretty good pull, because in the Attitude Era, they had this really stacked roster, and yeah, in some ways, he did fall through the cracks. He was a guy that you'd watch all the time. He had good matches. He was a contributor, right? He wasn't just a guy on the roster. Like, when he was on the roster, he was on the card. You wanted to see his matches.
He wasn't big enough to be a mechanic, you know, like to put up against anybody to make someone else look good. And he ended up making guys look good, but it, you know, the thing is, like, you know, it was his match, you know, like he had a Taijiri match, and it was just kind of based off of what the other person was doing, and you know, he didn't win a lot of the time, but the guy that he had a match with, you know, looked like $1 million. So yeah, I think, you know, he's long overdue. Let's go ahead and go. It looks like NPJW is not going to be on Access for a while, because they didn't show it this past week. And I kind of looked through, and it's not in that time slot anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Because you didn't get a recording either, right?
Right. I thought that was just going to be a one-time thing, because it looked like...
What, it was some festival.
Because since Coachella was happening, it was some music festival, so I thought maybe they altered their programming because it was Coachella, but I didn't look forward. You're saying you don't think there's going to be...
I looked like a week ahead, and there's another, some country festival that's going to be playing at that time. And I did a search for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then didn't have any showings for it. So I'm hoping that's not the case, because this stuff was
now you're hooked.
Yeah, I'm hooked. I want to know what's going on. But they did announce that they are going to have their own
network,
and they're going to charge like about $10 or $8 to $7 a month, you know, with all the same stuff. So I don't know. Maybe I have to pull that and start watching that.
I think we got to do the brother deal over here.
Yeah, you do WWE.
You're pirating my WWE.
No. I'm not pirating anything.
I come over and we watch on my network account.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And you'll have to go vice versa.
All right. So let's go ahead and go Game of Thrones.
Jon Snow, man. I mean, he's just a...
That's right. You didn't know that was going to happen, huh?
I don't know anything that's going to happen. I've had this feeling that he'd end up being the Lord of Winterfell at some point. And it's like, dude, this fucking guy over here, right? It's like, can never just actually get what he wants, right? And he's like, he's got like his code and his idea of what he needs to be like the man of his word and stuff. It's like he right there had the offer to get everything that he wanted, and he still says no to just to be a member of the Night's Watch, because like that's what his word was, man. And so the only thing that's ever made him go back on his word was that wildling Punani. Yeah. But aside from that,
wildling Punani,
the wildling,
the firebush,
yeah, the fire, yes, the firebush. But aside from that, I mean, dude, it's just like. He's admirable, and now he's in charge of the Night Watch.
Do you admire him?
I admire him.
my wife admires him.
Like Raleigh Fingers?
Yeah. No, but yeah, he... Yeah, I'm just looking forward to... They better not kill that guy. That's all I gotta say.
Okay.
That, yeah. I thought the episode was good.
It's kind of slow, though, huh? It's like, it's just like...
It's a slow bit. It wasn't as slow as the first episode, but it's giving me what I want. Right, I'm enjoying it.
And what about Cersei and stuff and everything she's doing? Because I mean, I know what's going to happen, so I kind of want to know what your thoughts on Cersei and where she's at as a character right now.
I think she is who she's always been. I think she's got a plan. I don't know. I think Cersei's not going to be around much longer. That would be if I had to make a projection.
Well, why is that?
There's too many people that don't like her and seem like they're gaining momentum, and basically she sits on, even though she's not on the throne per se, she's there where everyone's trying to get to, so someone's gonna have to take her out pretty soon.
And her not getting her uncle to back her up, you know, I think that's a mm-hmm. that's a big mistake right there, you know, like. Because, I mean, the hand dies, you know, Jamie's gone, and then, of course, you have the imp that's not there either. So, like, all, like, the kind of the people that made that house great, they're not there anymore, and she's, like, the last bastion of that house, and you can only go so far, you know, being a queen, the mother of the queen, and trying to have complete power. And then she brings in that one guy that kind of like the Frankenstein's monster guy that, you know.
The mountain?
Not the mountain, is the that one maester that she brought in on the council that they didn't like, because mm-hmm. he delves into like
the dark arts.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Isn't he the guy that is keeping the mountain alive? Right?
Yeah.
You got that, and then the other thing too. So I would think in this kind of situation, for her to maintain power, like her best chance is, you know, Tommen's gonna have to like. Become like a valid king quickly, and the best way to get him to do that would be through the chick that was supposed to marry Joffrey, that is now, I think, she's engaged to Tommen, yeah. Or at least she's trying to side up to him.
Yeah.
But like, Cersei's fucked with that chick plenty. She seems like she is a social climber, and I think like she knows how to like say all the right things to Cersei, but I think the first opportunity she gets, she would flip on Cersei in a heartbeat. So, I think Cersei needs her.
Yeah. The one thing that the imp did when he was the hand, like, she's, the problem with Cersei is that she thinks she's too high to consort with anybody that's not of her caliber or of her social standing, where the imp, like, you know, brought in the sellsword and stuff and everything, and he gained power that way, you know, like, he had power in the streets. He made alliances with people up high, so he always had like he always planned for something. Where, from what I'm seeing through TV, is that Cersei's just relying on her name mm-hmm. and relying on her being a Lannister. And now that there's no Lannisters around, she's pretty much by herself. And I don't think she's strong enough to do that. Like, you know, the imp made all these. He made all of these backroom deals and stuff and everything to solidify
power.
And then his problem was that he had his dad, and his dad, you know, is the most powerful man in the Seven Kingdoms. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So, and then what about the Sand Snakes and stuff, that house over there with Oberon's family? What do you think of that?
I'm just on a wait and see right now. His Oberon's lady looked pissed. And then I didn't catch everything, but actually our guy Bruce does a Game of Thrones recap on Monday, and he kind of mentioned, like, I didn't really
catch... Bruce?
Damon Bruce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't really catch that whoever the king is, Oberyn's brother, is, like, wheelchair-bound at this point.
Yeah.
And she kind of had this, like, veiled threat of, like, yeah, you're not going to be the king that much longer. So, I mean, I think that's all in play, too, because... If anyone is going to have like the motivation to avenge Oberyn, it's her. And if she can somehow come to power, I know who the Sand Snakes are. You know, I don't know much about them, but I kind of know who they are. I know they're not to be trifled with, and they would definitely have a purpose. And that's another dangerous enemy could be coming to towards Cersei.
And the guard for that king, that guy's the man, dude.
Yeah,
that guy's tight. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is a fast moving skill on our parts. It's only been an hour, but this usually happens during take home shows, especially. You know, we're waiting to see storylines play out, and we're waiting for the new storylines because the residual storylines for WrestleMania are wrapping up, so we don't have that much to talk about. But
yeah, well, then after we get through this, then not that it's the next pay per view, but I think after this they start building towards SummerSlam, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's when, you know, that's your next major deal that you got to build towards, and SummerSlam's always a fun pay per view to watch.
Yeah, I've probably watched SummerSlam
more
the
than
most out of WrestleMania, yeah. I mean, that's usually the one that I get, and one that I'll come over and watch with you. The Royal Rumble's another one, so we'll see how it goes. So, move skill number 107. Got my boy Better Have My Donuts over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. I got it right this time. I didn't switch it up. Better Have My Donuts, Bad News Ramen over here. We'll check you guys out next week, and we'll go from there.
Yup.
Ghost face, catch the blast of a hype burst. My clock burst, leaving a hearse. I did worse. I come rough, tough like an elephant tusk. Your head rough, fly like Egyptian musk. Aw, oh, shit, butane cleanse, bark the Wixen. However, I mastered a trick just like Nixon. Causing terror, quick damage, your whole era. Hard rocks is locked the fuck up. I found shot, PLO style. Hazardous, cause I wrecked this dangerous. I blow spots like Waco, Texas. I watch my back like I'm locked down. Hardcore hitting sound, watch me act bulk and tear down. A little bit tight asshole. Songs going gold, no doubt. And you watch your corny nigga fall. Yeah, they faking all that. Carrying gats, but your mind plan rolling like 40 max. Now you act convinced, I guess it makes sense. Wu Tang, yo, suit represent. I wait for one to act up. Now I got him backed up. Gun to his neck now. React what? And that's one in the chamber. Wu Tang banger. 36,000 danger.